Billy. Senator Metzen, happy Valentine's Day.
You, what a treat.
Looks like you're all, you're ready.
Tell them where you got it.
You're ready to go. Rockstar.
See?
Oh, I'm always thinking of you.
That's a nice
He's re-gifting.
Done.
He's re-gifting.
He doesn't get any.
Well, I think we'll take any kind of gifts. So we'll take them all.
He can be the people.
We'll fight over that one in the middle.
Middle of the table.
Middle of the table. Easy. She gets it.
We've got a bunch of re-gifters here.
All right, members. I can tell it's an exciting day. Call to order the Jobs and Economic Growth Committee. A quorum is present. Happy Valentine's Day to all those in the audience. We have three bills in front of us today, members, and let me make a couple points. Senator Ingebrigtsen, why don't you join us at the table now with your piece of legislation, and I'm going to just make a couple housekeeping points, but Senator Ingebrigtsen is bringing Senate File 1567.
Mr. Chair, that document is still on its way, so
you want me to?
Something you'd sooner do first or to expedite the committee, that's fine.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, you're saying you're not ready?
Yes, I'm saying that.
Why don't we let's spin around then? We're flexible here. Okay. Senator DeCreif, could you go to the table with Senate File 1689? We'll at least start that. We don't have a large number of testifiers for Senator DeCreif's bill, and I'm not anticipating much controversy, so we might be able to take up this one first. Thank you, Senator DeCreif, for being flexible. And again, while you get yourself situated, members, a couple of kind of housekeeping points. The governor's jobs bills, which we've committed to giving a hearing, I think have now all been formally introduced. They're in four or five separate pieces. And the initial plan was to have Senator Scoy present the governor's tax credit proposal tomorrow. I now understand Senator Scoy may not be available. So, again, we've committed to hear these bills. Stay loose, if you will, about tomorrow's. And then we're also going to start some confirmations of the commissioners of the agencies that we have jurisdiction over, which are, I think it's five. So tomorrow we'll have Commissioner Tingerthal from Housing Finance in front of the committee to process her confirmation. And so that'll be the kickoff of that for this committee. So with that, let's turn to Senate File 1689. Senator DeCreif, good morning. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee. I wanted to start out by saying my interest in bringing forward this bill. I'm a member of the Minnesota Patriot Guard, and there was a time a few years ago in history when I started hearing about some protesters going to some funerals of fallen soldiers, and I decided to get involved. And ended up going to my first mission, which was a funeral in Welcome, Minnesota for Robbie Basivio. And that was one of the first of true missions of the Patriot Guard in the state of Minnesota. And it was a very interesting day. There were 500 bikers that showed up that day to help protect the family of Robbie Basivio. And his parents, Bob and Patty Basivio, have become very good friends of my wife and mine. And but one of the things that I just want to point out about this group is it's all about showing honor, dignity, and respect to our armed forces and to soldiers and their families. And in my time with the Patriot Guard, I was one of the 20 ride captains in the state for a couple of years. And I've been to more funerals than I want to talk about, but been to some events where we did send-offs. And those were some mixed emotional days, but we also did some days that were very, very fun, and that was welcome homes. And I was honored to be able to lead some escorts, to escort the buses back to Mankato and St. Peter on a couple of occasions where we brought troops back. And what I'd like to do is those days of bringing these troops home when they were reunited with their families are days I'll never forget. what I want to do is just those. That's what I remember: is the troops coming home, and us needing to make sure that we're there for the troops now after they were there for us. So what I'd like to do with that is I'd like to introduce Senate File 1689 as amended. It's a Veterans Reemployment Rights Protection Extension, and this is a committee engrossment. There's four sections to it. The first section talks about USERRA. The second section, state recruitment. The third, reemployment rights of non-public employees. And the fourth, about veterans' preference in state hiring. I'm sure everyone is aware that post 9/11, veterans in Minnesota are struggling with unemployment rates north of 20%. Last fall, the Star Tribune ran an article highlighting the fact that 22.9% of recently returned veterans don't have a job. Only Michigan and Indiana veterans are having a tougher time. Clearly, the best way to get veterans back to work is through broad, sustained economic growth. And as we work toward that goal, the state can help in other ways as well. We all recognize veterans possess skills beneficial to the workplace and our economy as a whole. Their experience...
Chairman, excuse me. You said this is an amended bill with 1689 and that
we don't have the engrossment.
We've got the consoles thing in four sections, and the bill in front of me, 1689, is one section.
Which one?
Senator Metz and I...
We don't have the bill.
I believe the hubbub behind me is related to, do we have the right paperwork at the right time here?
So well, he could continue on explaining it, but this is a one-section thing. In it. I don't have the bill.
Yeah, we don't have the bill.
Senator Crafe, if you can... Why don't you continue your explanation, but I think what we have is we have the bill as introduced. At least the members at this table have it as introduced.
Okay, and there
but
is
you have a longer version. And,
yes.
And that's what the Senate Counsel's memo refers to, but we don't have the legislative language on that. Maybe Senator Ingebrigtsen has that one. But so Senator Crafe, go slowly, recognizing that we're getting copies of your bill, the final version of your bill.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Metzen. I apologize that we don't have that in front of us right now. Senator Crafe.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We all recognize veterans' skills, and we have to do more to make sure that these skills are not left on the bench. Before you, soon, we will have Senate File 1689, which includes a few provisions, which taken together with Senator Daley's bill here as well, aim to help improve the employment climate for veterans in Minnesota. My bill intends to address veterans' unemployment in part by further encouraging the administration and the department commissioners to make greater efforts to hire veterans. The hiring program we are most familiar with is a point system preference, where veterans qualified for a potential state job receive a bonus of 5 or 10 points, added to their score on certain evaluations for state jobs. Our current system mirrors the federal government, and I'm looking to strengthen those provisions to 10 points for veterans and 15 points for disabled veterans. Second, my bill would add veterans as a class of employees for the administration to target in their recruitment efforts. Currently, a number of protected classes are the target of recruitment. I want to add veterans to that list. Third, I'd like to point to Section 3, reemployment rights of non-public employees. We have a unique situation in certain parts of the state where Minnesotans serve in National Guard units based in other states. In northwestern Minnesota, citizen soldiers are offered reemployment protection if they are called up to emergency service by the governor of Minnesota to help with flood relief on the Red River. When these Guard members return home, they get their old job back. However, if the very same person is a member of the North Dakota National Guard, a Minnesota resident, but a member of the North Dakota National Guard, and is called up to serve by the governor of North Dakota to work on the west side of the Red River, the same reemployment guarantees are not in place. Admittedly, this would not impact a large number of people, but the reemployment rates are significant nonetheless, and it's a matter of fairness. If a Minnesotan gets called up to service, he or she should get their old job back when they're done with their service. My bill would provide this reemployment protection for Guard members if a service called them to any state rather than just this state. And finally, when a veteran returns home from federal active duty, federal law ensures that they are entitled to the job they left. This law is called the Uniformed Service Employment and Reemployment Rights Act, or USERRA for short. Private sector employers are responsible for hiring veterans back to their old positions, and if it is found that this is not done, there is exposure to civil liability. The state, through the 11th Amendment to the Constitution, is immune from civil liability in this state does not rehire a veteran if the state does not rehire a veteran to their previous job.
Senator Kreif, take a breath there. So we are now we now have the copies of the engrossed version of the bill. We'll get those out to you, my new sweetheart, Senator Metzen, and all right, Senator Kreif, keep going. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. My bill strips the state of civil immunity in these cases and puts the state on par with private sector in veterans reemployment contests. This language would also place USERRA on par with other federal employment law in that the state has no immunity from liability in adherence to federal age discrimination, fair labor standards, family and medical leave, and ADA laws. Again, we all know the best way to get vets back to work is to grow our economy, and we will continue to do our part to support policies that will do that. But in the meantime, there are a few measures the state can take to improve the hiring climate for veterans, especially for state jobs, and I would appreciate your support. Thank you.
That's pretty well timed, right? Senator Kreif finishes just as we get the bill. So members, take a moment, if you will. Are there any questions at the outset here for Senator Kreif? Senator Kreif, I understand there's a letter of support in our packets. Is that right?
That is correct. There should be a letter that talks to Section 3 of the bill.
So Senator Kreif and members, that's a letter from Corey Gentilin.
That's correct.
Okay.
And I don't actually have a copy of that letter here with me, but
members, questions on Senate File 1689? Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify on Senate File 1689? If so, if you could please indicate to myself or staff at my right side here, Senator Kelash.
Yeah, Senator Kreif, Mr. Chair, Senator Kreif, I think it's this is a good bill, but my only question is it comply with federal equal employment opportunity language? Are we creating a preference that is illegal under federal law, for example? I'm not sure. I'm asking. I don't know if you've run it by that.
I would refer to legal counsel, I guess, on that and ask them. I don't believe so, but let's refer mm-hmm. to legal counsel.
And, Senator Kelash, I would encourage you to do that. Mm-hmm. I also know that legal counsel right now is tied up on another issue, but if you could rephrase your question for Senate counsel.
My question is, by creating this preference, are we doing something that is in violation of the federal equal employment opportunity?
Mr. Chair, members, and Senator Kelash, I believe this, when we were drafting this in our office, I know that several other states have done this, and I believe the issue was looked into to see whether it conflicted with federal law, and I believe that issue was dismissed, that this would not conflict with federal law. It is something that was discussed, and I believe that they think that this is would be okay with federal law.
And once again, just the legality of requiring that employers rehire folks that are engaged in the National Guards of other states. Do we have that authority to implement that? We're telling
North Dakota.
We're basically doing North Dakota's job, and I'm not sure if there's other states that have done this and made it legal or not, but it just seems to me that there could be some fuzzy legal issues with requiring employers to hire somebody else's National Guard folks back.
Mr. Chair, members, and Senator Kielash, I am not certain about that particular provision, but it's something certainly I can ask the council for state government that drafted that this provision.
Why don't we take some testimony here? A gentleman has approached the table. Sir, could you just identify yourself for the record? And state your name and welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Ralph Donay. I'm the chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council of Minnesota. It's a group of 34 different organizations that come together to help promote legislative issues for veterans. I just wanted to point out, sir, that we have to take into account that we're looking at another 100,000 active duty folks. They're going to be told, go home tomorrow. There's no warning to this stuff. These reductions happen, and it's across the board in all the armed forces as well as the reserve units. I've seen statistics of the different reserves being cut by 20 and 30,000 each across the board. Those are a lot of folks that are going to be coming back to Minnesota looking for work. So, and also, there was a time when these folks came back. They spent time at the different military bases around the United States to recover and get back into shape. Well, now, due to the drawdown of the 90s, we no longer have those hospitals, those doctors, and those facilities to take care of those people. So they're being sent to the closest VA to their home as soon as they can. This creates a load on the rest of the spouse, the rest of the family. They're going to be looking for employment also. So anything that we can do to aid these veterans and their families is greatly appreciated. And we just wanted to point that out for you, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Denay.
Mr. Chair, just to follow up, I don't disagree with the information that you're giving. I'm just wondering if there's any some of the legal issues that I don't disagree with it. I just don't want to pass a law that's illegal federally or that. Do we have the authority to tell business leaders that have guardsmen from North Dakota that they have to hire them back? I'm not sure. I'm just more concerned about creating a muddy mess or a legal problem. I don't know if you can answer that or not.
Senator Craig for Mr. Denay.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Kielash, I would have to say that I'm not a lawyer, right, and I would say that we are going to have to rely on legal counsel. I don't know if we have a way of getting that answer right away or not.
Does this go,
Senator Kielash?
Mr. Chair, where is this going from here?
This would go to the floor. So I guess one thought I would have, Senator Kielash, to give me your sense of this. Before the full body takes any further action, we could ask Senator Greif and counsel to assure us that these questions have been taken care of.
Shouldn't this go to judicial just because of the requirements of rehearing?
Not under that impression. Senator Greif, you'd be willing to make sure we don't have any legal wrinkles here that we're missing or not understanding?
Mr. Chair and Senator Kielash, I would be willing to try to track this answer down and make sure that we are in compliance and aren't breaking any federal laws in making this change.
Would you, Mr. Chair, would it be okay to send it to judicial where they really look at this stuff a little closer? instead of to the floor?
Oh, you don't want that.
Lay it over.
So, you don't want to go there.
Or we could lay it over till next.
Dr. Kielash, are you on judiciary?
No, I'm not. I just know that, you know, in the past, all these issues were cleared in judiciary before it went to the floor, so... I'm not trying to be obstructive. I'm just understood. Trying to make sure that we got our ducks in order before it hits the floor. These bills are supposed to be vetted at the committees, and that's what the committees are for. You know, if we have a question on legality, usually judiciary is the one that takes a look at it and says either yay or nay on this stuff. Yeah. And it just seems to me that it would be good to scrutinize it before we put it on the floor and
Senator,
create other issues.
Senator Kielash, I appreciate that. My sense from Senate counsel is that this has been pretty well vetted, but I would like to get a confirmation of that before the full body acts. And I don't think this has to fall into judiciary, which is a very busy and a very long process. So, but we would always have that option too. If we discover some legal issues that need some more work, we could re-refer it. We could refer to judiciary. So, and members,
Mr.
are there any?
Mr. Chair, the other thing is that
Senator Kielash.
We do have a Veterans Committee. I don't know if that is.
We heard
this. Was heard in Veterans. I'm
been
sorry, I didn't know that. Okay.
So, thank Senator you. Kreif, you're on notice that there's a little work to do. I'd still like to. We got a few more questions here, but I think there's enough here that we can move the bill, but there's still some work to do. Senator Dietzick.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Thank you, Senator Kreif. I just have a question on the veterans credits, and this might be in the statute already. Is this a one-time election that they take, or can they do it on a several times? And I don't know if that really matters. I'm just asking.
Sorry.
So it's subdivision section 4, where they can, you know, do the credit of the 10 points. Can they do this?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Craig.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Dizek. My understanding is the credit, and this is already in statute. So all we're doing is we're just increasing it. And the if you note down in under section subsection 5, section 5, subsection 5, it does talk about there will be added on line 2.23, there shall be added to the competitive promotional examination rating of a disabled veteran who so elects a credit of 5 points, provided that the veteran obtains a passing rating on the examination without the addition of the credit points. And number two, the veteran is applying for a first promotion after securing public employment. So I do see that there is a provision in here for a second go-around for a promotion. But again, I believe that is all in current statute already.
Okay.
So.
Senator Torres-Ray, did you have your hand up?
No.
Senator Metzen.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Senator DeCrep, on 115, maybe this isn't that important, but the effective date on the first section is upon enactment. And when is the rest of the bill become law? Why is it singled out the first, should it all be consistent, or?
Mr. Chair.
Ms. Doyle, do you have a sense of that? I'm hearing through really good staff work that some of this language was adopted at the last committee, at Veterans Committee.
Oh.
And Ms. Doyle had pointed out a potential oral amendment on effective dates, but Ms. Doyle, do you want to give us a better sense
yes,
for how this all meshes?
Mr. Chair, members, and Senator Metzen, I believe there was an oral amendment offered in the state government committee for section 1, effective upon enactment. I was just going to make a technical suggestion just to have it effective the day following final enactment. That's normally the way we have an effective date. And I am not certain why that particular provision was singled out to be effective upon enactment. Normally, then the non-fiscal pieces, if there isn't an enactment date, it will be August 1st.
Yeah,
and the rest would be, you know, whatever day following final enactment, if you choose to make that.
I don't know, Mr. Chairman, the thinking behind it, but it's usually August is when, but it's not a big deal, but I just caught it, and it's different than the other four sections.
Senator Crife.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Metzen, as I recall, and Senator Torres-Ray may recall this as well, I believe Senator Wigger made an oral ask, if you will, to actually have all of these sections have that effective date, effective upon enactment, if I recall, in the Veterans Committee. And we were going to look at that, and it was merely an oversight that that we didn't add that.
Just move that down to here, I guess.
Correct.
I would actually offer an amendment to make that the effective date under each of these to be this section is effective upon enactment.
Thank you, Senator Crabb. We're just discussing the possibility of doing that. Ms. Doyle, are you catching that or
yes.
even suggesting
yes.
confirming that?
Mr. Chair, Member Senator Crife, I think we could just add a section 6 at the bottom and stating sections 1 through 5 are effective the day following final enactment. unless we want to have an effective date after each section, but I think we can just do it all.
Do it at the end.
Let's try to do it once. Ms. Doyle, could you restate what we're trying to do here as an oral amendment to kind of clean up the effective date issue?
Mr. Chair, there will be a new section. Section 6, and it will say effective date, and then it will say sections 1 through 5 are effective the day following final enactment.
So would we strike line 1.15?
And then, yes, we'll delete line 1.15.
Okay, so Senator Metzen offers that oral amendment regarding effective dates. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed nay. Amendment is adopted. Further discussion. So you got a little work to do still, Senator Crife. Appreciate the discussion, and we'll connect with Senator Kielash and anyone else in the committee who wishes to follow up on that legal issue. So let's, having had that discussion then, Senator Crife moves that Senate File 1689 as amended be recommended to pass, and this would then go to the floor. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed nay. Motion passes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Crife. Thank you, members. Thank you, staff, for doing a few things on the fly there. So let's revert back to how we wanted to start today. Senator Ingebrigtsen is raring to go. Senator Ingebrigtsen with Senate File 1567.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and it's an honor to be in front of you and this distinguished group of senators on the Jobs and Economic Growth Committee today. Sorry about the delay there. We did not have the proper material to move forward, but we do now. Folks, Mr. Chair and members, if I might, last year you may recall House File number 1 that was vetted and passed and signed into law by the governor was a start of the environmental permitting review process that added in increased efficiencies, deleted some overlap and duplication of rules and regulations, which saved time, cost, and
Senator Ingebrigtsen, hang on 2 seconds. I have a member who wanted to
sorry
go at the front end here. Senator Torres,
thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to say that we received two versions. You're amending a version, your bill. So there's a technical question with respect to are we reviewing, are you describing now your amendment? So you want to adopt the amendment to present it? I was just unclear. And if that is the case, I do have a question.
Basically, I just want to give a little overview of where we came from last year and why we're back at it again this year, and then I'll ask for the amendment
at that time,
if that's okay.
So, Senator Ingebrigtsen, with your overview and then to the amendment, and then I will make sure to recognize Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr.
Chair
and members. Recently, we've heard testimony from our state agencies, actually in my committee, Environmental Natural Resources, that this legislation has improved the process and created jobs in our state, actually. So it was somewhat exciting to hear that. Companies are now investing in Minnesota due to the improved and streamlining permitting process. These changes will create jobs and foster economic development while protecting the public health and environment and natural resources of our state. So today, actually, I'm here talking about basically section number 12 of the bill, and it starts on page 8. And before that, if I may, I do have an amendment that I believe Senator Peterson would offer.
All right. So Senator Ingebrigtsen or Senator Peterson or I don't know if Mr. Quillis is going to testify to this, but could we then have someone describe the amendment that's being handed out per the sponsor's request of the A5? Can you give a little – somebody – who should I look to give a little background on the A5?
Mr. Chair, if I could, Mr. Quillis from the chamber is here to help us out with the technical portions of the both the amendment and the bill as well.
All right, so, thank you, Senator Quillis.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Tony Quillis. I'm the Director of Environmental Policy at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Thank you for the time today to comment on Senator Ingebrigtsen's Senate file 1567. I suppose the first thing, Senator Torres-Ray, before I get into the amendment is there was two copies, I think, of Senate file 1567 in your packets as introduced, and then the first engrossment. We'll be working off the first engrossment. And then to describe the amendment, the A5 amendment, Mr. Chairman, there are, and specifically focusing on the environmental permits coordinator, and I'll get into that a little bit, but to discuss the amendment to get the shape of the bill in the shape the author desires, the A5 amendment deals with, in some conversations with some stakeholders, we're going to delete where there's references to local licenses. We're mainly focusing on, we've heard a lot of comments on the federal and state level, not so much on the local level. So we're trying to focus, you know, those licenses are very unique. They deal with occupancy or building codes. We're trying to deal more on the state and federal level with these. So we remove any references to licenses in the first part. In the second part, Mr. Chairman, on page 9, you can see where we go through at the end of line number 7, we add some language that talks about if there is an opportunity for a memorandum of understanding between a project proposer and any federal, state, or local agencies. Sometimes this occurs, I'll give you an example, on a permit to mine. There is a memorandum of understanding if it crosses into the federal level, usually between state agencies and the federal EPA. So we just want to see if there is a chance that when we create this mining permit coordinator, that person could help coordinate any execution of a memorandum of understanding. Mr. Chairman, to move on, this if we're so lucky, the environmental permit coordinator is created. To also, we're going to add some language to try and coordinate all federal, state, and local public comment periods and hearings so that they won't have numerous of them, and where possible to try and coordinate them all. And also additionally, Mr. Chairman, I think the we're going to try and coordinate the publication and public notice of all the draft permits and environmental assessment worksheets and impact statements to try and coordinate them. Mr. Chairman, I think there were some concerns expressed by the federal EPA on the word concurrent on line 1.14, and I think we're going to need to delete that, Mr. Chairman, just for your to notation. Then, Mr. Chairman, to continue on, technical changes on 1.16 through 1.18, and then I wanted to clarify in negotiations with Deed and Commissioner Phillips and his staff that 1.19 to 1.25 clarifies that the project proposer, if they would go the environmental permit coordinator route, we would be responsible after negotiations with the agency to pay for the time assessed for that individual. And finally, Mr. Chairman, there is some language in 116D04 that defines a government action. Mm-hmm. It even talks about assisting. We think that the definition of if a project proposer uses an environmental permits coordinator, that would be deemed assisting and automatically trigger an environmental review. We wanted to make sure that just because a project proposer has a conversation with the permit coordinator over at Deed, that does not automatically trigger environmental review, just because they're having that conversation. There are going to be numerous other places where that project, depending on how big it is, it might be a mandatory category. 100 citizens could get a signature to trigger that environmental review, or it may be voluntary by the project proposer. So there are still a number of areas to go through. We just want to say if you're a project proposer and you're going to go through and talk to the environmental permit coordinator, that that doesn't automatically trigger the environmental review.
Senator Torres-Ray, to your question.
Mr. Chairman, I'm very confused with this process, and I would like to hear from you as the chair. All of these languages of our environmental regulation, we are having in front of us the engrossed version of an environmental bill. This amendment is related to that, those environmental permits. My question is, why are we having those amendments in this committee, number one? Why are we having a discussion about an engrossment of environmental policy in this committee? I was prepared to talk about the jobs, and I have several questions about it. If I'm going to engage in a discussion about environmental permits, then I need to figure out, you know, in this committee, I don't know if members in this committee are in the environmental committee, and has this been heard by the environmental committee, and has it been engrossed in that committee, and have these been presented there? Because we have no business in really talking about environmental regulations here per se. We might have a discussion and we have an opinion as to, you know, how many jobs that may create, and I'm looking forward to hear the presentation about Senator Ingebrigtsen should say that we have some records that last year indicate that last year this created some jobs. So I really want to spend the time doing that, because that's this committee. But if we're going to spend time reviewing environmental regulations, I don't think that's my job in this committee. So I would like to get a clarification, Mr. Chairman.
Well, so you got a lot in that question, Senator Torres-Ray. So. Yes, this has been heard in the Environmental Committee, and we can ask the chair of the Environmental Committee to comment on that, and I know we do have some members who serve on both. So the path that this legislation needs to take, that I understand, is environment, then before us here in the Jobs Committee, and then to finance. So it's at least three steps. I think last year, so I guess big picture from this end of the table, Senator Torres-Ray, last year, I think we pretty firmly established that regulations in general, and absolutely environmental regulations, have an impact on projects, have an impact on job creators, and have an impact on jobs. And so I think we were able to do some things. I give a lot of credit to Senator Ingebrigtsen in a bipartisan fashion with the administration. And I think this is – my sense is this is kind of the second act of that. I'd agree that this is not the place for a detailed environmental discussion, but there's certainly room for us to discuss these regulations and its impact on the economy. So I'm comfortable, and I think I want to let Senator Ingebrigtsen kind of explain the path of this bill, and maybe others at the table too, and where they see this going, and address some of Senator Torres-Ray's concerns.
Mr. Chairman, if I may,
Mr. Quills.
I'm going to kind of go off the amendment and go back to the bill. The bill is part of, as Senator Ingebrigtsen has pointed out, and we thank him for authoring this, is to go through and continue with some environmental permitting review and streamlining of the and put some efficiencies and modernize the environmental review and permitting process in the state to help create some jobs and economic development. In the Environment Committee, Senator Kielash and I and Senator Higgins had some interesting and long conversations and comments about the proposal. The proposal that comes here is dealing with an environmental permits coordinator, and that's the reason it came here. It's not dealing with any standards in terms of environmental permits. It's dealing more with the coordination, if we can, and the understanding and identifying areas where we can maybe cooperatively take some of the duplication and overlap out of the process. And, Mr. Chairman, I'll just give you a brief history real quickly, and Senator Tomasoni might have even been there. The governor, Commissioner Landwehr from the DNR, Commissioner Austin from PCA, Commissioner Sertich from IRRRB toured a number of economic development projects in northern Minnesota. Subsequent to that, the governor had a press conference and created an environmental mining permit coordinator and created a mining sub-cabinet within his administration. And we thank him for that. We think that is a great idea. There's a lot of economic and jobs potential in there, and we think that there should be in the administration a environmental or a mining permit coordinator, if you will. But we also thought that that should be available to other businesses in the state, not just specifically to mining. It could be in forestry. It may be in energy and green enterprise assistance, manufacturing, maybe even agriculture and alternative biofuels. So we wanted to offer that permit coordinator to those industries as well. And, Mr. Chairman, that's why we put the environmental permit coordinator language in there. We expanded upon a little bit more and further defined it. And then subsequent to that, the governor announced that he was creating a Minnesota business first stop with Indeed. And that's why we're in front of your committee. The environmental permits coordinator will be headquartered in Indeed. So that's why we're here before the committee today. And we've been working with the Commissioner of Deed and his staff to try and work forward and make this coordinate with Minnesota Business First Stop. As a matter of fact, we've got a number of meetings to make sure that we can move this process forward and we're all going to the same goal.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Mr. Chair, to Senator Torres-Ray, does that answer your question?
Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator, I am just a little hesitant to adopt some language related to, the coordinator position. Thank you for explaining that. That makes sense, and clearly, you know, I don't feel uncomfortable with acting on that. But clearly there are some language here related to environmental permits and licenses that I don't know if they have been heard in your committee, Senator. I guess it's kind of a 1-2-3, right? If I knew that all of this was done in your committee, then I don't have to think about, you know, the decision that we make here because you already reviewed that process, and all we're talking here is about jobs. My hesitation is, why are we here? Has this been done? I guess maybe you are the chair, so sure, you can tell sure. us. Has this been done in the committee and vetted in the committee and this was reviewed and passed so that now we can really focus the conversation only on the jobs aspect, and let's just talk about that language and not adopt language related to environmental policy that I don't think that we should be doing.
Mr. Chair, thank you for that. Now it's clear to me what you were looking for. Yes, this all has been vetted in my committee. Everything has, and the reason we're here is specifically for this coordinator position and how I believe it's going to be paid for. So that's really all that pertains to this. But you did ask about what numbers of jobs. We don't have any numbers to bring to you from last year's legislation, but we did have testimony from the MPCA just within the last week and a half in my committee. The question was asked directly of that representative, has this and will this create jobs? Will it help create jobs? And they said definitely it has. Norbord out of Duluth actually sent our committee a letter. I'm not sure if the whole committee received it or not, but it was mentioned in our committee from Senator Carlson. It's from his district. That they're able to move forward quickly, or a lot quicker now, to be able to expand their business in Bemidji. Again, not having a number of jobs, but at least expansion means jobs, and they're going to get here quicker. That's the whole purpose of this permit. So, other than that, moving forward to the amendment, possibly, Mr. Chair, we should to help clarify it. And I think it's been already explained by the
Peters.
And thank you, Member. Let me also ask. I've got for testimony this morning. I have if Kirk Kadelka from MPCA. I have him down on this list. If you could maybe sit at the other chair at that table, and. And maybe at the outset, I'm sure I butchered your name. I apologize. How should we refer to you? Please identify yourself.
Chairman, committee members, my name is Kirk Kadelka. I'm the legislative director with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. You did fine with the name.
All right. Mr. Kadelka, are you here to speak on the amendment language in general? I'm just trying to figure out when to time you in here.
Yeah. Mr. Chair and committee members, I was going to talk about some of the bill overall and some of the high points on issues, so I can wait if it's the committee's wish to stick strictly to the amendment in that section. For
all right, let's so Senator Peterson's offering the A5.
Yep, Mr. Chairman, members, I'd offer the A5 amendment with one change on 1.14 with the deletion of the word concurrent.
Mr. Chairman, to that point.
Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, why did we put concurrent in there, and what's the EPA's objection to it?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Tomasoni, folks much smarter than me, which isn't very hard to do, but they have pointed out that due to federal rules and regulations, there needs to be, after the publication of draft environmental assessment worksheet or impact statement, then there needs to be, I think it's a 30-day timeline before publication of the permit. So there needs to be a lag time for the appropriate regulatory agency to process the comments before they can start on the permit. So they're needed. It can't run concurrently. It needs to be separate.
So the mechanism doesn't work.
That's right.
Senator Tomasoni, that's you're good. All right, members, let's take action then on the A5, and we'll have some more testimony. And I'm not sure if we've now lost Mr. Kadelka. Senator Peterson offers the A5. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed nay. The A5 is adopted. So, Senator Ingebrigtsen, this is now in the form that I believe you intended it to be. Mr. Kadelka, had you said everything you wanted to say?
That's enough.
I'm quite angry about the pronunciation of his name.
Apparently. I get that all the time.
I understand that.
I do, too. Mr. Kadelka, whether you want to be in general or a big
Mr.
picture.
Mr. Chair, committee members, I wasn't sure if we were going to talk about more of the bill, if the author and Mr. Quillis was going to talk more about the bill. We'd like to just share some of our thoughts on the overall bill, but I would wait to, after that, to explain the whole bill before the author shared.
I'd like to hear you on the overall bill, Mr. Kadelka. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you first off. And as Senator Ingebrigtsen mentioned, the executive order in Senate File 42 was very good legislation and did make a difference in the timeliness of permits. And we have done one of our semiannual reports that are on our website that kind of outlines some of the metrics and measurements of that information. And I'll, if folks would like to, I can share copies with the people later. As a result, we did spend numerous hours and resources to improve applications, permitting guidance, and the way we do business internally to help get some of this efficiencies and timeliness to help speed up permitting for businesses. And part of that has been a closer relationship with the Chamber. We'd like to thank them, too. We have now monthly meetings understanding to better understand each other and where we're coming from in this area is to kind of work out how we see things differently and where things can be changed, where it might just be language differences. Having said that, though, the executive order in Senate File 42 did make improvements to permit timeliness. We have concerns with this bill that it actually starts going in the opposite direction. Now, there's two spots where I want to mention that. In the bill itself, it does talk about the existence of a 150-day goal and a clock starting when an application is deemed complete. Our concern is there are really three things that drive the timeliness of a permit. One is MPCA staff and resources. It has a large effect on how quickly we can get our work done. Number two is public interest and controversy of a project. The larger public interest and the more controversy, it does drag out the timelines on it. And number three is complete and quality information from proposers. And the changes within the 150-day goal and when that clock starts really removes that partnership that was built in House File 1, where there were expectations on the state and the MPCA to move forward and get their work done. Also expectations for proposers to get in applications that are high quality and complete so that our folks can do the work. We feel that this steps back and kind of removes that expectations on proposers, and we will start seeing applications that aren't nearly as complete and sitting in MPCA's offices, and we're waiting for time. We think this helped drive quicker permitting, and that's a change on here. The other is a permit professional in the bill. There is some determinations of the qualifications of the person, but we don't necessarily believe they reflect a good quality permit writer. Things such as 10 years experience after, you know, 10 years one day, if they were putting together poor materials, that doesn't change. So we do have some concerns with that, and maybe it should be something that's MPCA designated. The other piece is it really does put in a situation within 30 days, not only does the agency have to give a thumbs up or thumbs down on the permit application, what's there, but also the draft permit, which creates us in a bind. Normally during a permitting process, we'll work back and forth with a permittee on changing information on technical standards, on things in the permit, to kind of get a tweak where it needs to be. There's a little bit of negotiation going on there. This really lets us only say yes or no, and we reject the permit application, and it starts back to the start. It doesn't allow for that working together to get a final product, working to get to yes. In this situation, we have to really make a quick judgment on it. And then there's also an issue here where it allows then for things to go in the courts. And if we start putting these permits because the permit professional is deemed that they weren't, they were aggrieved in some manner by our decision, it adds additional time to the permitting process. We feel that's not going to be helpful to get out permits and to yes in a quick fashion that everyone wants. In general, then, too, it was mentioned the governor and the agencies have worked on Minnesota First Business First Stop, which is really going to help businesses work with the agencies. The first call is to this phone number or the email, and the coordinator at DEED is going to know everyone within the agencies, be able to get them to where they need to for financial assistance. So those agencies that do that, they'll get them in touch and coordinate that. If they need business or technical assistance on work plans, they'll get them to the small business assistance. If it's setting up pre-meetings with permitting regulatory agencies, they'll set up pre-meetings so the proposer can come in, we can work with them, kind of outline what they're going to need to move forward, how we can help them to do that. If we've seen someone do a project like this before and there's a better way to do it to get you out of permits, we can let them know right then and there and make it a much smoother way. And I think that's very good to hear that the Chamber is working to try to integrate their concept of a permit coordinator into that larger piece. The fourth is dealing with the environmental review. Reviewing mandatory categories on environmental review is a very good idea. The executive order passed by the governor expands on that a bit, and we're looking at environmental review as a whole. Environmental review was put into place before a number of the permitting requirements and regulations that are currently on the books. The goal of the EQB and the agencies that will be a part of it is examining it all from the very scratch. Does it still work like we intended? Is there things that are now being duplicated because of permitting and other regulations so we can remove those type of things? So one part of that is the mandatory review, and we think that mandatory categories, that'll be a part of it, but there just want folks to know there's a much larger question we need to look at here, and this is something that's overdue. Environmental review's been on the books for 30 years. It's something we probably should be doing more often than every 30 years. And that's all I have right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kadelka. And I know some of that, I'm mindful of Senator Torres-Ray and her, and we're trying to talk about DEED, we're trying to talk about jobs. You know, we'll
I think we're happy to give a little leeway here to talk about the larger pieces of this bill, and appreciate Senator Ingebrigtsen bringing it here on all those points. So my strong sense is there's going to be some more work that's done probably in the Finance Committee. Senator Kielash.
Mr. Kadelka, adding this environmental coordinator to the DEED department, is this creating just another bureaucracy that a person has to go through in order to get to the PCA to get their permitting done? Or is this going to allow people that volunteer to use the coordinator to move up the line, ahead of the line, as far as the permitting goes? How is this procedurally, bureaucratically going to work here?
Mr. Chairman, if I could, we could maybe do a tag team if Mr. Kudelka has some input. But as pointed out, this environmental permit coordinator is just another, if you will, it's overused, but another tool in the toolbox. It would be something that a project proposer would be able to use. We'd see it in kind of a twofold as either a management or an assistance tool to a project proposer. You don't have to go this route. But if you want to, you could go down this way. If you're a canola crushing plant up in northwestern Minnesota, you know your industry fairly well, and you've got all your financing, but you're not quite sure if you've got all the permits you need, you would probably ask, or at least start the conversation with, an environmental permit coordinator to make sure that you had everything along those lines. That would be one example that I could come think of off the top of my head. But it is only an option for a project proposer. It wouldn't be mandatory to go through, and it would be in coordination with DEED and the governor's proposal to create the Minnesota Business First Stop. So we're working with them as they're moving forward on Minnesota Business First Stop to work forward with this permit coordinator and try and my conversations with the commissioner and his staff have been, we know where we're going. We all want to get there. We're just trying to make sure that the roads intersect before we get to the final intersection.
Senator Kielash?
I just was looking for the department's position on it as well.
We could ask if Deed wants to be a part of that question.
One of the things that's confusing to me is that we're talking about environmentally permitting through the department of Employment and Economic Development, and it seems to me that the quickest way to get your environmental things questions answered is to go to the departments that are in charge of permitting. Now, I realize that there may be trying to get the financing whatever together, but I think, Mr. Quillis, what you're kind of saying is if a person has issues with the permitting department and you're trying to get this economic development going, that person that uses this coordinator out of DEED is going to move ahead of those folks that can do a lot of it themselves because of the coordinator. So, and I'm not sure that was the intent, but it's what it sounds like to me. I don't know if the department can.
Let me go to Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To Senator Kielash's question, you talked about bureaucracy. It's creating more bureaucracy. What the folks are telling us, and they should be telling you the same thing because they're certainly calling me and they have other senators, is the frustration with the amount of stops that people have to make. That's the complaint of the bureaucracy. This cleans it up a lot. You go to one person, and that person tells you, yes, in fact, you have to go here, you have to go there, not stopping there and say, oh, by the way, you got to go over here. Oh, gee, I thought I had it done. Oh, I'm going to have to go over here. You're going to know exactly what to do with the coordinator. So the bureaucracy is cut big time.
Members,
seems to me, anyhow.
I know I saw it. Was it Mr. Diklich from DEED to this point, to this legislation in general?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Tom Diklich. I'm with the Department of Employment and Economic Development. The issue that we were talking about, or they've been talking about, is that environmental permitting coordinator, and we actually have been talking with the chamber on this, and they're going to come up with some new language down the road on this. Like you had said, it's definitely a work in progress. I think our goal as an agency is our Minnesota Business First Stop would be doing all this coordinating. So to have another permit coordinator within DEED when we already have someone, whether the executive director of Minnesota Business First Stop or not, that would be duplicating that. So we're working on changing that with the chamber.
So, Mr. Diklich, maybe in a sentence or two, could you just summarize for us the Minnesota First Stop and how that may be a fit here?
You know, I wish I could. I'm not an expert. But
come on,
we do
that
have
was an easy one.
It was a softball, but not for me today. No, we've had, as Kirk had mentioned, that they've been working on this since last year when the House File 1 passed, and we've been putting a lot of hours into this, working with the other agencies. And Kari Howell from DEED, who is going to be in that position, whether it be an executive director or whatnot, she's done the most planning on this Minnesota Business First Stop. So I am no expert. If you'd like her to say a few words about it, that would be ideal from DEED's standpoint. She is the expert.
Is she here?
Yeah. She's right here.
Kari, do you want to join us just for a second to fill in what Mr. Diklich left out?
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you to the committee. My name is Kari Howe, and I work with DEED, and I'm the person in charge of Minnesota business. First up, in collaboration with other partner agencies, including the MPCA, the DNR, the Department of Commerce, the Department of Agriculture, IRRRB, and our job is to help businesses grow and site and or expand in clean technology areas as it relates to job growth and business development in the state of Minnesota. We have a staff team from each of those partner agencies that meet regularly with the businesses that want to grow in those areas and need more than one agency to network with in terms of providing resources, technical assistance, financing, water, air quality, feedstock. So we're already doing a lot of what is being proposed here through the Minnesota Business First Stop model. It's a concept that grows on the Green Enterprise Assistance Team that is already been developed in the state by the legislature, and we're focusing currently on clean technology kinds of projects, although that is expanding.
Thank you, Ms. Howe.
Thanks.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Howe, could you please, I have a question for you and also for Mr. Quillis, because I think it's important that we clarify this. I would like to get an answer from both of you. Does this legislation changes what you're doing, enhances what you're doing? Because I think part of the issue with the coordinator, I have kind of some of the same concerns that Senator Kilash has, right? Now you have to figure out how to do coordination with another staff person that, for whom we need a job description, et cetera. So is this legislation helpful at this point? Does this help you move faster, better, creates any efficiency or any – does it help in any way?
Ms. Howe.
From my standpoint of working with the staff at the MPCA and the DNR as it relates to permitting and efficiencies, I would say it's already starting to work under the Minnesota Business First Stop model, where our staff from the agencies, various agencies, are meeting with two businesses this morning as we speak, and I'm here instead of there to talk about this bill that's moving forward. And one of the companies that has been brought forth to the Minnesota Business First Stop staff team meeting this morning to talk about all state resources and beyond came through the MPCA. It was a business that they have been working with, and so they realized it is now time to bring them to the Minnesota Business First Stop for all kinds of resources, including permitting within the state of Minnesota. Does that answer your question?
Yes, okay. And I would like to answer the same question to Mr. Quillis, because I think, you know, I want to hear from you as to, you know, if the governor has initiated a process and they are well on their way, I know what it takes to coordinate with different organizations and different departments and the staff and all of that. It takes a long time. So how does this help with that kind of bureaucratic process? Because that's mostly about administrative decision, you know, hey, you need to do this and collaborate with this. How does this bill actually help with that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Torres-Ray, committee members, I think the problem we're having is everybody's focusing on the environmental permits coordinator. It's not the environmental permits. It's the coordinator that we're focusing on right now to try and coordinate everybody to go through. And the reason we went to DEED was the state agencies tend to get real parochial about their silos. And we're trying to find somebody, short of maybe Commissioner Sertich up at IRRRB, unfortunately, Kari has fallen into this, where they're going to try and get them to work outside of their silos with other state agencies. So we're trying to get a coordinator, if we get somebody that's in here that decides a business that, again, this is only an option for them, that decides to go in there, that Ms. Howe can help them coordinate through the process, whether it be for environmental permitting, for what their end product may be, if you're a green energy a company, and she might say, boy, we just worked with another company. Have you talked to them about trying to get rid of your end product? So, I mean, there are a number of options that we could go through, but we think this coordinator position dealing with environmental permits will be great in supplementing what Ms. Howe and the Minnesota Business First Stop is trying to accomplish.
Mr. Chair, I have a follow-up, if I may.
Senator, let me just note that we got another bill, and I've got 10 people up to 10 people want to testify on the next bill, and I've promised them time. So if you could just wrap it up, and we'll take
thank you.
Action.
Mr. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do understand the complexity. Mr. Wills, I was a coordinator for the Department of Human Services working with 87 counties, 11 reservations, and about 1,000 nonprofit organizations trying to coordinate.
I
was an ombudsperson yeah. as well, and had the state with legislation behind me telling me that I had the power to make them work together. It didn't work. What works is when the governor says to all of the agencies, you're going to coordinate this and you're going to do that because I'm the governor and this is how business are going to get done, not a coordinator. And I'm sorry to tell you this. I understand the reason for why you want to do this, and it makes a lot of sense. But if these commissioners and these staff are not ready with a plan to coordinate this, there is no coordinator in this world who can help you do this because these are federal regulations, state regulations that are so complex. So I don't have a problem with this really per se. I just want you to know that practically what the governor is doing makes a lot of sense because he and his commissioners and the different divisions have an obligation to do this. And I think, you know, you pressuring to say, you know, this needs to be done for businesses makes a lot of sense. The creation of a different organization truly is additional staff for which we will have to come up with money. And I don't know really in all of this. I haven't seen a fiscal note. But it is important that we clarify that. It is important that we do this work. But who can do it makes a big difference. And I think the governor has put in place a very good vehicle to get it done. I'm not necessarily sure that a coordinator can make this happen. That's just my – I wanted to leave this on the record because it's a very important thing. We have a lot of coordinators who are very ineffective in the state. Actually, we need to delete a lot of coordinator positions in the state because they are powerless.
If I could just mention the anticipation of partnering with the chamber on this whole effort in order to better serve businesses in a private partnership way is the exciting part in terms of helping businesses grow jobs in the state of Minnesota. So,
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Kiesch, you promised me this will be short.
No, Mr. Chair. Some of this is that, wait a second. We have a bill in front of us. We have questions. You know, you have a schedule that you seem to be saying we don't need the testimony.
Because you have 10 people behind you that I care about.
You know, I have questions about this position. So, I mean, Mr. Quillis, I need to ask, and that is that according to the PCA, they had 2,658 permits received last year, and you've got one coordinator for that many people. And I'm just quite a trying to figure out how in the world we can possibly get that workload done. And that's just from the PCA, not to mention any other agencies or whatever throughout the state that are going to need different kinds of permits that aren't covered under the PCA. How in the world are we going to get this done with one coordinator? And then I have a follow-up on that.
Mr. Chairman, again, Senator Kielash, this is only an option. And it would only be, I think the estimate from Deed's fiscal note was we think that maybe this might be five, upwards of 10 people that might take this option. It wouldn't be for every single construction stormwater permit that was submitted to the state agency. It would be for larger projects.
And then I guess to one of my concerns with the first step is that when we get there, how are we coordinating the deed being able to know which permits are required and all of that, and how they'll be able to expedite any permitting process with the agency without bumping that particular project ahead of the line for with the PCA?
Well, our partners with the MPCA are very, very integral to that whole discussion that you just brought up, because that's where the expertise lies. It for permitting is in that department, certainly not in Deed. We are not a regulatory agency, as you all know, and so that is where that expertise does lie.
Is Deed currently working with, I mean, realizing that you're trying to promote business and you're currently doing that without a coordinator, So how does this make it any better with a coordinator?
Currently, I'm the coordinator of the Minnesota Business First Stop, mm-hmm. with all the agencies having staff dedicated to the Minnesota Business First Stop as well. And so permitting currently as it resides right now is with the MPCA, and we work through that process with lots of communication with the business. It's sort of like a concierge approach at a hotel. I'm sort of the concierge, where I help businesses wade through a process of which many resources are in all kinds of departments.
So, Mr. Chair, does that mean that we've already got this person essentially in place and we're just doing the legislation? It sounds to me like you're already doing what the coordinator is doing, or this proposed coordinator is doing.
This is a little bit different, but it's because I am already coordinating all kinds of things with the other agencies with their expertise and making sure the businesses are getting what they need in order to grow. Does that make sense?
Well, my question is this duplicating what you're already doing, or is this saying it just, what shall I say, authorizing you to continue doing what you're doing? Would you be this environmental coordinator under First Stop, or would we have to hire a whole new group of new staff?
I would rely heavily on the MPCA because that's where the DNR.
Well, this is going to the deed, though, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So this would you be that person indeed for this if this were to pass the way it's?
I'd have to figure that has to get figured out yet within that would have to get figured out with indeed because
that sounds like
this
it.
Is more than what this is more than what I do already is full time.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to figure out how if this gets passed how we're going to work that part through.
But Ms. Howe, it sounds like we might be adding to your job. So Senator Peterson moves that Senate file 1567 as amended be recommended to pass, and then this goes to finance. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed nay?
No.
Bill is the motion does pass. Thank you, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Senator Daley. Senate file 1599. And Senator Daley, maybe I'll look to you to coordinate who else walks up to the table with you.
Won't you come home, Bill Bailey?
Senator Daley, thank you for your patience. And again, I'll look to you to quarterback kind of who wants to talk and present when, but this is Senate file 1599.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. We'll just get started by if you could take out your packet of information. There's some PowerPoint slides in there. And rather than putting them up on the wall here, that would take a few minutes. We'll just get started. It's titled Employment Task Force. At the top, it's Employment Strategy Information Brief. If you could pull that out, then you'll be able to follow along with the good captain here.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, or good afternoon. Captain still, Ron Jarvey.
It's still morning, Captain.
All right.
At least a few more minutes, but just give your full name for the record and welcome to the committee.
It's Ron Jarvey, Jr. On behalf of Senator Daley, I'm just here to brief you some information. I just want to start out by letting you know that this effort and this initiative supports all service members, all branches. Take a look at your next slide in the slide pack. This is the agenda that we'll talk about today. I'd like to start out by talking about some of the facts that have been bearing on the problem. It was reported that Minnesota was one of the highest states for veteran unemployment. And then for the gaps that have been identified here, unemployment was one of those percentages for our service members that wasn't tracked. Local, state, and federal employment resources were not synchronized. And then service member veteran understanding and ability to navigate through these resources was a difficult process. If you were to type in veteran support for employment, you can pull up about 1,500 different websites, and we've learned that this is not an effective way to assist our service members. We also found that employers lack the understanding and the ability to market these employment opportunities. And then finally, we realized that there needs to be a commitment on the service member's part. We're not giving a job. We're saying that they need to earn this this career and this job. But what we can do is that we're shaping the future and shaping the environment for these veterans and service members to find success in the career field. The problem statement that has driven us over the last 9 months with this topic is that how can Minnesota Interagency Employment Partnership identify unemployed service members and veterans and connect local, state, federal resources to best prepare service members to obtain employment? That task force, I'd like to just introduce to you real quickly and just give you an idea of who's here. Department of Employment Economic Development. These partners, if you're here, would you just please stand? Department of Veterans Affairs. The Director of Military Outreach, Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, and the Army Reserve. Mr. Chair, I just want to let you know, first off, thank you, partners, for being here. But this partnership and this collaboration is unlike one that you'll see anywhere else. To continue with a little bit more background, as I stated before, over the last 9 months, we've collaborated, working towards one goal, and that's to assist our service members in employment. The strategies that we had currently been using were analyzed, and that led to the result of us being able to create the new proposed initiatives, which our partners have stepped up and really taken control of and done a great job of implementing. The strategies that we've developed, number one, are supposed to help each other out. So we understand from the service member perspective and the military perspective that anything that we do for that we want to happen, we need to support our civilian counterparts and our partners here. We want to make sure that our resources are used efficiently and effectively. And that has been taken into consideration for all of these employment strategies. I'll turn it over to Mr. Jim Finley here to talk about some of the initiatives that DITA's completed.
Mr. Chair, committee members, DITA conducted a survey with the service members, the soldiers, the National Guard soldiers that are in Kuwait currently. There's about 2,700 soldiers in Kuwait. We've received almost 1,000 responses back. This pie chart shows you a little bit about the breakout. The number we're concerned about is that unemployed number, 19%, that are looking for work. We know a lot of these service members left unemployed. We know some of them were laid off while they were deployed. So our goal, our target group specifically for DEED employment is that 19%. Next slide is what's at stake. Veterans Employment Service has a motto, and that is finding a job solves a lot of problems. Some of the issues on this slide are some of those problems. It's more than financial.
If you flip to the next slide, I just want to talk about this layers of support. What we've identified as a task force is that there needs to be multiple facets of the strategy, and so we've incorporated different levels. The first one being what we can do for those that are in uniform. Are our first line leaders are those that are in the unit with our service members on drill weekends and really engaging with them. This is where National Guard and Reserve units can support the state key partners' efforts. The second line, as you'll see, is the workforce centers. This is the main effort in our strategy. And for the first time ever, we're directing all service members to go through our workforce centers, through our veteran employment reps. And this is our solution to not turning a soldier to those 1,500 different websites. Other things that we've partnered with Dion and this interagency employment working group has done is we synchronize our marketing message. We've taken a look at what we can do to make it easier for a service member to go on to our Beyond the Yellow Ribbon website or the Department of Veterans Affairs website or DEED, and we've made sure that each website is synchronized in what it talks about, ensuring that the soldier isn't confused or the service member isn't confused, which will then also create a better environment for finding employment. The third line there is the Yellow Ribbon Networks and is ESGR. This is a key component to our strategy. We understand that our service members live throughout the entire state. They're not just here in the Twin Cities. And so this third line of effort is really to support regionally. In partnership between ESGR and our Yellow Ribbon Networks, with our veteran employment reps, we have identified this to be a very successful solution. Finally, the last line of effort here is our ongoing synchronization of local efforts in our networking. With the support of Department of Veterans Affairs, our Director of Military Outreach, ESGR, DEED, we continue to build Yellow Ribbon companies. We continue to build those relationships within our communities that support our veterans and our service members. We go to the next slide, categories of support. I just want to point out here we've identified five different areas that a service member may fall into coming back from a deployment, and that's either seeking employment or education or returning to their previous employer and even pursuing entrepreneurship. So they're there for you. The next slide just depicts what I alluded to earlier. It talks about how we analyze the current strategies that we're using and then what we wanted to do differently. As you take a look, I'll highlight a few on the right-hand side, the branching out to all services, coordinating earlier contact with our service members, and then additional role with our veteran employment reps regionally is what ESGR has done. We've created the survey, as Jim had talked about before, and that survey has been helpful in just being able to identify and allocate resources appropriately. MNSCU's assisted us as well, and the Department of Veterans Affairs in all of this. We've established constant contact with these soldiers and service members that have identified themselves as needing support.
Part of the reintegration process that has been developed in Minnesota, which, by the way, has been adapted by Department of Defense, all states are required to have a model like Minnesota has. We're very proud of that. It amounts to a process where we meet with service members when they come back at their initial demobilization site, which is typically in a state other than Minnesota. So we send a team to work with these soldiers and talk about resources and explain what's going on back in Minnesota. It's followed by a 30-day reintegration and a 60-day and a 90-day. The slide talks a little bit about what happens during phase two and phase three, the 30-day and the 60-day reintegration. Again, you're going to see that there's some specific things that we're looking for. Our veterans employment reps right now are working via the Internet with soldiers in Kuwait on resumes and cover letters and interviewing skills. We want to have these service members ready for a job search when they get back to Minnesota. We don't want to start with them when they get back to Minnesota. So we're already working overseas over the Internet with them. We're trying to identify at this 30-day reintegration if there are any soldiers that on that survey indicated that they're needing help with employment but have not made contact with a veterans employment rep. So we're going to be checking back at these 30-day reintegrations to make sure that we've contacted everybody that needs the help that they've asked for. We're going to be talking about interviewing skills and networking, resume review and refinement. These briefs will be mandatory for soldiers that are coming back that have indicated they've got an issue with employment. There's also going to be educational briefings there from folks from MNSCU for soldiers that have decided that school is the direction that they want to go in. 60-day briefs build off that 30-day. We're going to do some follow-up work with soldiers. We're going to do some mock interviews. There's something some of you may be familiar with called a 30-second elevator speech. That's that 30 seconds you have with an employer to convince them that you're worth continuing the conversation with. So we work on soldiers with that. There was a survey done in June 2010 from SHRM, Society for Human Resource Management, that indicated 80% of soldiers have a hard time describing their military experience and the training that they had and the skills that they picked up, and then they have a hard time relating it to jobs that they're applying for. So this is a big deal. Skills translation and helping them understand what kinds of jobs may be good matches for them. We've distilled this down to a three-step process for veterans. And again, Captain Jarvie mentioned the fact that this is being promoted in all the agencies. We've got brochures that we've developed specifically for this brigade combat team that's coming back. Step one is contact your local workforce center and a local veterans employment rep. Step two is complete your military GPS. GPS goals plus plans equals success is a Minsku product, and it's a goal-setting tool. If you don't know where you're going, you don't know when you get there. So we are very interested in having soldiers go through this so when they work with our DEVOPs, with our veterans employment reps, we have some kind of an idea on their goals, their job goals. And then the third step is post your resume on MinnesotaWorks.net, which is the state's labor exchange system.
The next slide is just a quick overview of where we're looking, where we were, where we are now, where we're going to go to. I just want to highlight that this survey that DEED has helped us to create, our intent is to make sure that all units and all branches in Minnesota are able to utilize this tool so that we can have a baseline number of what we're looking at for veteran unemployment. This way ahead also points out the fact that we have already incorporated planning for career fairs through DEED. Number one, having a statewide one, and then specifically for the BCT, doing some regional career fairs as well. We've come a long way with our interagency working group and have accomplished a lot of things. With that said, there's a lot that we can still accomplish with your support. So on behalf of the Interagency Employment Working Group, I just want to thank you for this opportunity.
Good language.
And on behalf of all of us in the Senate and actually the House, too, all the legislature, thank you for everything that you guys are doing. Mr. Chairman and members, as we have just heard about the high unemployment rate of our veterans, we need to remember that even more of these honorable men and women will be returning from the Middle East in the coming months. Successful reintegration of these service members back into our communities should be one of our top priorities. Private sector employment is a crucial vehicle for this transition. Last year in Washington State, they authorized private sector employers to establish employment preferences for veterans. Senate File 1599, which is before you, members, is a bill designed for Minnesota to do just the same. My intent is that this will directly result in more veterans who are facing such a high unemployment rate to successfully find employment when they return home. I'd like to emphasize that this veterans preference program is completely voluntary. It is not a mandate for our employers. This legislation will allow employers to grant preference in hiring and promotion to our veterans. Also, to a spouse of a veteran who has a service-connected permanent disability and to a surviving spouse of a deceased veteran. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd ask for your support.
Thank you, Senator Daley and Captain Jarvie particularly. I know this goes beyond the scope of the legislation, but I would really be interested in your comments from any of the three of you on why are we at least reported to be, you know, one of the worst states for veteran employment or reemployment. Why are we the third worst, according to this one study? How does Minnesota end up in that kind of position? Do you have some thoughts on that?
Mr. Chair and Committee, it's complicated. There's a lot of things that go into this. Minnesota has no active duty military bases. We just have Guard and Reserve. That's where the big problem is, and it's the continued deployments that concern employers. The fact of the matter is that state of Texas places more veterans in job than any state in the country. Well, there's also about 16 active duty military bases in Texas and almost 200,000 active duty military members. So if you're not married to one or the son or the daughter of one, you're living next to one, and everybody knows the value of a veteran. So this is not a secret in Texas. Minnesota has struggled with this. The economy is getting better. The unemployment rate for Minnesota is around 5.7 or 5.8%. The unemployment rate for post-9/11 veterans is between 12 and 13%. For this group coming back, it's 19%. So there's a lot that goes into this. Minnesota, I don't believe, has a problem employing veterans. The issue comes with the National Guard and Reserve components because of the continuous deployments.
Senator Nelson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know we're short on time, but I just would be remiss if I did not thank Senator Daley for bringing this and being so thoughtful and thorough about how we can do a better job of reemploying our veterans. And with that, I have one question. I'm particularly interested in the MNSCU piece, and I think we might have the director that works with veterans here. If he might come, I have a question about that. I just appreciate everything that's in this legislation. There's one thing that I've been thinking about and working on in maybe going a step further, and you're the exact person who could answer my question. I'm just curious about, it seems like there's so many of our men and women who come back from oftentimes active duty. They've been in the military for 10 years. They've had fantastic military training. And yet it just pains me to think that they come back, and yet we make them, they've already invested time in serving their country, and yet we make them, in order to get that degree, we make them go back to school to learn things and get course certifications for degrees when they've already had this training on the field. And I'm looking at legislation to somehow align this. And, you know, this is what I'm hearing from my constituents, and I'd like you to maybe just give us a little bit of direction on how we can better align this fantastic military training that our veterans have with our MNSCU institutions so that we can help them get those degrees faster and those jobs.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Senator Nelson. That's my name is Steve France. I'm the Director of Veterans Reentry Education and also System Director for Student Life in the system office for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. I was at a reintegration event 6 or 7 years ago, and I was standing with a group of soldiers, and I said, okay, how are we doing? And they said, well, you know, you're the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, community colleges, technical colleges, state universities. You're our hometown schools. We come to you. You're doing just fine. And I said, but what could we do better? And they said, you could give us credit for our training. And I said, all right. You're not getting it? And they said, well, we are getting some. And we've had instances of many of our colleges and universities giving many credits toward the degree as it relates to their degree and the training. So I was thinking about this for several months and went to several of our campuses. I asked one of my colleagues who's a friend and a transfer specialist, are we doing all that we can? And she said, well, we're doing as good a job as we can. And I said, are you happy with that? And she said, no, I'm not. What could we do that's better? She said, well, you don't understand how difficult and complex this issue is. We have to take the training that's given by the military and analyze that and then throw that up against the curriculum that we have, analyze that. It takes weeks oftentimes to do one. Do we keep a record of that? No, we don't. There's no place to have a record. So we have developed in the last 3 years something called the Veterans Education Transfer System. We're told that it's unique in the country. The American Council on Education has reviewed this, as has the Council for the Adult and Experiential Learning in Chicago. And we have developed the system. You're certainly welcome to go out and try it. It's at veterans.minscu.edu. We're still working on it. We're not there yet. But in that system, a service member can put their name, or not their name, excuse me, their branch of service, their MOS, Military Occupational Specialty in the Army. Others, branches call it different names, but their rating or their military occupational classification, what they were trained in, their job. And since all of the military training is the same per branch across the country, and there is a 70% competency rate, we know what that curriculum is. So instead of starting with our curriculum, we start with the military curriculum and throw our curriculum against that to compare. And then we brought faculty together from all across the state to take a look at this and to record those. So once it's recorded in our system, we then have a review system that students can go into and take a look at their program, degree audit reporting system it's called, DARS, and they can, and that has all the requirements for the degrees. To shorten this up a bit, what they get is a list of the schools that have programs that are related to their MOS, a listing of the programs by relationship to the MOS, and the credits that have already been awarded to that MOS. Now, sometimes that means zero. It's very difficult for an 11 Bravo, which is an infantryman, to qualify for credits in a specific goal area. I'm still working on that. Sometimes it's difficult. On the other hand, someone who was trained as a light wheel vehicle mechanic may get up to 18 or 20 credits at Alexandria Technical College, or law enforcement at Hibbing has, I think, 18 and 23 for human resource, 42 alpha MOS. So that's in there now. And so what we've discovered is that the best way for us to do this is to engage our faculty in looking at this, record it so that it makes much more efficient the whole process, takes some of those days and weeks and hours out of that process, because now our transfer specialists can simply go out there and see what other schools did for that same program. And so they're not reinventing the wheel every single time a service member comes in. And so we have done it. Thank you for that question.
Mr. Chair?
Else.
Just a quick follow-up. This is very near and dear to my heart, and it's very exciting to see the progress that you've made there.
Thank you.
Want you to know that if there's more that can be done to make that more efficient for our men and women coming back, and if we need some sort of tie-in with DEED so that there's a tie-in to where the jobs are,
yes.
I stand with you ready to work on that, and I'll follow up with you after the committee.
Thank you.
Senator Tomasoni.
That testimony kind of scares me that we can't remember what we did without having a computer program to tell us. But at any rate, I'm not going to get into that, Mr. Chair, because I think what you asked was what I was thinking along the same lines, and I'm just wondering if Minnesota has the model reintegration program for the entire country. Is your answer still the same as your answer was to the chairman about why it's not working in Minnesota?
Mr. Chair, committee, I'm not sure that it's not working in Minnesota.
For third in the country, worst reemployment, it's not working.
And again, the numbers are very difficult to track. The fact of the matter is that some of the studies that have been Minnesota, the reason we're worried in Minnesota primarily is not where we rank, but because of the fact that we're twice as high with veteran unemployment as we are with unemployment for the general population. That's very concerning. And that's post 9/11.
We have a low unemployment rate.
I'm sorry?
We have a low unemployment rate.
We do, comparatively.
Comparatively for the rest of the country.
Comparatively speaking. And that's why such a concern over the higher unemployment rate for veterans. Whether we're number three or not, that is what a report came out and reported. We're going to continue to work on this very hard, whether we're number three or whether we're number 30.
So, Mr. Chairman, I guess the key question here then is by allowing employers to give preference to veterans, will it help?
Mr. Chair?
Captain Jarvie.
Just like to talk about what the military is doing in support of what DEED has been doing, and that is, number one, we've identified that service members do need that support when it comes to how do you interview for a job, how do you create that great resume. And so I think what I can tell you right now is that the strategy that we've developed on the military side is to really focus on those basic skills, because without those basic skills, a service member can't go into an interview because they haven't had a resume that gets them that interview. So what is being implemented on the military side is much more supportive of what was happening before with DEED. So I can tell you that We've done what we can, and we're implementing that in our reintegration events, from everything from the resumes to the mock interviews, and we're setting our soldiers up for success and our service members up for success that way.
Senator Daley, why don't you take Senator Tomasoni's question and use that in a concluding remark kind of format.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Senator Tomasoni. I do feel very strongly that this measure will help address. It will not solve it. Again, it's not that silver bullet, but it is another effort in the right direction. We've heard from many private sector employers who would like to do this type of thing. They're not currently permitted to do so because federal law prohibits it. This allows them then to provide a veteran's preference. They're not required. They just may provide this veteran's preference. And because I've heard from many employers that they would be interested in this, I think it is a good measure. It moves us in the right direction. It will help to solve some of the challenges that our veterans are facing. With that, Mr. Chairman, I would ask support.
Chairman.
Senator Metzen.
Yeah, just a thank you for bringing this forward. I think it's a good idea to give preference for in the private sector. I'm just thinking, though, that there's more to the puzzle than the language. I think there's a bill coming forward, I believe, that will give some tax credits to employers that do the hiring of veterans, and I think that's a great idea. So I think this is a part of the equation in my mind. It's a sound good, and it's a feel good, and it's the right thing to do. But I think there's more that has to be added to this, quite frankly. And one of the parts of the puzzle, I would think, and I think it's a governor's proposal, I don't know who it is, but is to give a $3,000 tax credit to employers that hire our men and women that have served. So this is good, but it's not enough, in my opinion. But thank you for bringing it forward. But we're going to build on this legislation you have in front of us.
Mr. Chair, I was just wondering, do we still have the program where we acknowledge businesses that employ people that come back and guardsmen? Because I know a number of years ago, the Adjutant General flew down and visited one of my stores and thanked me and acknowledged the employment of the service members.
Employees, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Daley, I wanted to I thank Senator Howe for whatever we're supposed to thank you for. Well, you got an award. Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah, just an acknowledgement. Just an acknowledgement.
Senator Daley.
The program is known as the Employer Support of the Garden Reserve, and they have an annual banquet every year to recognize super employers throughout the state. And last year it was held at the Prom Center, I think, and I believe it may be on the 21st of May this spring, if I have the – I'm getting the thumbs up. So, and the location for that?
Not published yet, sir, but soon.
TBD, to be determined. But it is on the 21st of May. And employers from across the state will be recognized for their support of Guard and Reserve members.
Well, May 21st, we'll be done here, won't we, Senator Metzen?
That's correct.
Still working on the Mr. Chairman.
I was wondering if Senator Howe could bring his award to the next meeting. I'd really like to see that.
I have a question, Mr. Chair.
Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering if Senator Howe got that award before or after he was the mayor of Red Wing.
Mr. Chair, Senator Miller, it was prior to my tenure as mayor.
It might have led to it. Thank you, Senator Daley, and thank you, Captain Jarvie and Mr. Finley, and for all the folks in the room. There's a lot of work going on. Appreciate you coordinating it and helping to explain it to us, and wish you all the success. Senator Daley moves Senate File 1599 be recommended to pass and be sent to the floor. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion is adopted. Thank you, members. Committee is adjourned.